Welcome to the New York Times podcast. I'm not cocky, I'm confident. So when you tell me I'm the best, it's a compliment. Of music, news, and criticism, I am your host, John Caramonica.
Yo, the revolver, the Maddie's cool. Knife game like daddy cool. Since Bally shoes, this is real live street shit. Truest and the deepest. No that go to jail just to get their teeth fixed. Think I give a
fuck. Your Olivia Rodrigo posters in. Tuck them in. That's not what we're talking about this week. Look, I love coming on here talking about Billy, talking about Taylor, talking about Olivia. It brings me a lot of pleasure. I know it brings y'all a lot of pleasure. But this week we're going back. We're going back to the old me. The versus between the Lox and Dipset. There's just nothing I want to talk about more. I've been talking about it every day since it happened, and we're going to keep talking about it. We got to memorialize it. It's that special. At the beginning of the show, we were playing Two Guns Up, or as I think of it as Welcome to D-Block. The day of the verses, I was at the gym, and literally my trainer played this right when I came in, played that song, and I could have bench pressed 500 in that moment. These are formative records for me. These are records that made up the person I am. These are pure adrenaline songs. There is no better thing for me personally, no better show to go to, especially in the middle of a pandemic where every show seems like a risk. I did a piece recently that's out in A&L. About going back to live shows. And I went to a bunch of shows. Some of them were very good. This is the only one I would have risked going to if I was not on assignment. That's how important it was to me. So we're going to have an episode about verses, about Lox and Dipset, about the legacies of the late 90s and the early 2000s, about what it means to be king of New York, even if that doesn't mean very much anymore. We're going to talk about the mindset of a winner, the mentality of a winner. We're going to talk about Jadakiss doing pull-ups. First, Jason Rodriguez is going to call in. Jason was a hip-hop journalist from the 2000s, used to work at MTV, covered Dipset, Lox, Bad Boy, all in its time. And then after Jason, another Jason, Jason Buford, who writes for Rolling Stone and covered the verses for Rolling Stone, who I got to spend some time with at the event. Jason's going to call in and we're going to talk about what it was like to be in the room at the event to witness the waxing in real time. But first, Jason Rodriguez is here. J-Rod, Jason, welcome to Popcast.
Yes, thank you. I'm very happy to be making my debut.
It's a long time coming. Jason, I need you to know now, before we get into it, my denim is sagging. I went to the front closet. I got my 90s Tims out. That's where we're at. The soles are coming apart. It doesn't even matter. This Versus had a mental dress code.
I purposely stained my brand new Tims with Hennessy just to have that feeling.
It's exactly right. Hold on one second. I got to get my bottle of scissor at the kitchen. Hold on. I'm not even lying. Hold on one second. I'm not even lying.
Scissor boys, quarter milli. That's for the real heads. They remember that.
I literally ran into the kitchen. I have a rare sealed bottle of scissor. I'm going to have it here. I might just hold it throughout the episode. I might just grip it. So purple punch liqueur. I got a liter of scissor. This is how we do in the whole episode. Okay. So first off, J-Rod, you and I are very much of the same era, right? And I knew for this particular subject matter, it was very important to speak to someone who was walking along this path in a contemporaneous way. So right now, you're working on podcasts, you have a Substack, a newsletter, Backseat Freestyle. Tell the people what you were doing 15 years ago. Like talk to people through how we got here, first of all, so everybody knows. Talking about certifications. Let's talk about it.
Listen, be clear. I get my funk flex. Be clear, New York.
Be clear.
I was a hip hop reporter at MTV News. You know, me and
Peace
my colleague Shaheem.
Peace exactly. To Shaheem. We should be calling Shaheem too.
Oh. Word up. Yeah.
Shout out Shaheem. Looking great on IG lately.
Yeah. So we used to cover the mixtape scene heavy. It was a column we had called Mixtape Monday. You know, we just devoured every mixtape, listened to everything. And then while we weren't listening to everything, we were in the streets, clubs, studios, everywhere, gathering intel, talking to every rapper, every producer, every executive. Yeah. So, you know, my Timbs are not only Henny stained, but also well-worn.
The important thing, and it's so, I'm so glad you brought up Mixtape Monday, because this era, so much of what happened that was essential in the genre was not happening on official albums. It was happening on mixtapes. It was happening on mix shows. It was happening on radio. This is a pre-Spotify life, a pre-SoundCloud life, pre-Apple Music. This is when there was a much more tactile relationship between hip hop and potentially the streets from which they came. It's a much more tactile relationship. And these are two crews that are the quintessential products. I mean, you can say G-Unit is the quintessential product of that era, but to me, the Lox, especially in their 90s ties with Bad Boy and then Dipset, I mean, the first wave of Diplomats mixtapes are as important in my mind as the first wave of G-Unit mixtapes. These are crews that are born and baked in that era. A real stroke of genius, I think, on the part of Versus to put them together.
I view G-Unit more sort of like the culmination of kind of these two distinct mixtape tracks. Whereas, like, you know, the Lox were just really just avant-garde raps over other beats. And then Dipset took it a step further with these half remakes of songs and, you know, and kind of this wild, wild west ethos of just going for yours and just pure adrenaline rush of raps. It was a time when there was like a bifurcated discographies, right? And there was this one that you had above the fold that was due to your major label, a recording track. And there was this one you had below the fold to what you're saying was a much more tactile relationship with the streets, which was these mixtapes that had very distinct type of raps and messaging. You know, a lot of ways precursor to like what drill music is, and it's very like direct confrontational music. And that before streaming, but also like really before social media engagement. And so there was like a regional distinction in sound, types of songs, slang. It wasn't sort of this monolithic thing that the internet created where anybody can buy anything from anywhere and grab any sound from anywhere.
Sound any kind of way on any
exactly.
kind of day.
Yeah.
And that above the fold, below the fold is actually really interesting because that was still an era in which a lot of the choices that are now de rigueur for rappers, pop remixes, R&B, melodic songs, those were frowned upon. Or at minimum, it was like, well, that's what I did on my major label project, but that's not really what I'm about. There was this kind of, even within a person, there would be this kind of bifurcation of like, well, I do this. I make these records with Mariah, but I make these records on the K-Slate tape. And what was really intriguing, I was rewatching the Versus right up until we started talking. And where I cut off was right at the point where Jewels was basically like, you don't have any girl records, which, you know, he said it in maybe a less artful way. But let's just frame it like that. He said, y'all don't have any girl records. And of course, that is not accurate. And then the Lox came with Ride or Die and so on and so forth. But these are artists that come from an era where there's still a tension about that stuff. There's not really a tension about that stuff now, but at that era, there definitely was, right?
Yeah, and Jewels had a few moments like that where history wasn't on his side the way he kind of recounted it, and it came back at him fast. And you know, but
that's only 18.
That.
He's lived a crazy
a
life.
Crazy life. Yeah,
he lived a but crazy
that,
life.
But, and you know, and that speaks to that bifurcation in a way where it wasn't reconciled in the past, right? So it's like you would be forgiven for not paying attention to the pop track, right? And so when he says like, you know, you don't have any girl records, and it's not just Ride or Die Chick, it's like Honey remix, Jenny from the Block's remix, Family Affair. So it's like Mariah, Jennifer Lopez, Mary J. Blige. And then Jadakiss is just taunting them with like, you know, we're talking Grammys. You guys don't know what Grammys
look
like.
You don't know what like. They look like.
Yeah,
you
what
don't
they
know
look
what
like,
they
right?
look
it,
like.
It, you know, it was just punishing and bruising. But to your point, like it's now a moment where it's reconciled, and that goes to like the largesse of the Lox now. But at the time, you know, working with Diddy was their day job. But when they get off, they're doing this, and it's with Clue tapes and this other stuff. It's a very distinct separation. Whereas now it's all the ammo in the world they need to really be like that third knockout blow that they gave the Lox.
You want to talk about character playing, right? Can you talk through what you were posting about on Twitter the other day? Because I think that that's really, it's related content to the Versus idea, because it is really about how the Lox, even in the moment of kind of like the purest return to the streets moment that they had, there is this aspect of character drawing that's going on.
My very initial tweet was the banter was so aggressive. And I put like the D Wade interpreting Kobe Bryant, where he's like, I love it. Because even that was distinct, like New York, where it's like, and even Styles and Jim Jones had to go to like great lengths to say, like, we're just joking. Because, you know, I think there's a slice of kind of like the audience who's looking at this, who is like, yo, are they going to fight? Like, that's expectations, when it's like, this is very like New York, distinct, in your face. You're defending your turf, because the idea of like, from that era of like, you know, going from Brooklyn to Harlem, that's a long distance relationship, right? Like, certainly as a kid, you're not even going from neighborhood to neighborhood like that. So, you know, it was super distinct. And the Lox, again, you know, things that are reconciled now, but almost were identity crisis then. It's like very street group, but also goes through the school of Diddy, right? So it's like they're doing these mixtape tracks, but with like, they're in sync, almost like a boy band, right? Like the ad-libs are perfect. It's not just a traditional hip hop ad-lib where it's like, I'm going to hit the punch of the bar at the end. You know, it's like, I'm going to drop out because I know you're going to come in. We're going to do like this. Two people are going to ad-lib on this part. Oh no, this song and this verse is too important, so we're going to let you ride on its own. Like, you know, their execution was just...
The synchronicity of it is just, it's really something. And to be honest, the synchronicity... To me, the Lox really always had a lot to do with the late 80s and the early 90s. Like, I hear EPMD in the Lox. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the idea when there were two artists in a crew or three, you know, and I'm sure you could track this back to the late 70s, you know, Cold Crush, so on and so forth. But I think it really kind of takes on its own character by the late 80s, where you have multiple artists in the crew who are all talented and who are all not competing with each other, but kind of cooperating with each other, but still allowing each other to shine. You know, you hear a lot of that in the Lox, but I think refined by Puff having this like really, really robust commercial sense of like, yes, we can like sandpaper and polish every last corner of what you do. That said, my favorite Lox release or Lox related release of all time is like quite literally a DJ free mixtape I bought probably on Flatbush, like I can't remember where, but like it's no DJ, it's just Styles P photocopied cover, and it's just like it's just 35 or 40 Styles freestyles and remixes, and I used to play that in my car, I mean, you know, for like a week straight, you know, like it just never ever left the CD player back when there were CD players in cars. That to me is the essence of the Lox. As much as I like those big crossover records, that to me was always the essence of what the Lox did. Also, as a sidebar, Juelz was giving him a hard time about This Isn't for Attica.
Yeah.
One of the only stories in my entire career that I ever reported but never ran was actually I went to Rikers with Styles and he did a concert at Rikers. And I can't remember why. I think it was like for New York Magazine, and maybe it was that this was in an era of New York Magazine where there was like a little too hot to touch for them. You know, I don't really know why it didn't run, but it didn't run. But it was amusing to hear Juelz say that. Anyway, I just had to bring that up because it was on my mind.
No, it's fascinating. Like the even like the construction of each group, right? Like, I mean, the Lox are an actual group, whereas Dipset's more a crew and a collection. Even the Taunts, right, where like, they're like, you know, taunting Freaky Zeke, like, you know, do you have bars? Like what song are you going to perform? And Zeke is like a charismatic outlier figure in Dipset who's more of a hype man and a friend. So, and he doesn't have any proper really releases like that, where it's like with the Lox, it's like Locked and Loaded. All three of us rap. We all deliver bars. And even Jim Jones, who's grown so much and probably has some of the best albums of Dipset, even his discography may rival the other two, are more talented than him. At the beginning, it wasn't that. And they're taunting him with that. Like, oh, in that song, Jimmy didn't even know how to rap when they did that song. It was brilliant in that, like, who the Lox were as a collection compared to Dipset. But then they out-showmaned Dipset. Like, that's the muscle that Dipset was supposed to flex. And they even got bodied in that category, too.
Okay, so in rewatching it on my computer screen, it looks more balanced on screen than being in the room. And in the room, it was almost like Dipset were like visitors. You know what I mean? Like they happened to be there. It almost was like a lock show featuring Dipset. That's how it felt in the room. On the live stream that the parts that I've rewatched, it looks a lot more balanced. But the thing that I was most struck by is Jada, more than anybody, Jada went in there wanting to win. Cam went in wanting to get a check or complete the task, but Jada wanted to win. And I think that that's a useful thing to think about in life, where it's like, if you go in and you don't want to win, even if you did win, you might not come off like you won. But Jada, at every 15 minutes, he's like looking in a camera and it's like, he's like, we're torching them.
That's even we're kind. It's more like every 7 minutes. Like,
yeah. Right? He's just like, we're killing them. We're murdering them. And Cam is just like, I don't know what Cam's doing. He's sitting on the lawn chair. And I say this as a person that was probably rifling through like 5 different Dipset t-shirts about which to wear that night. And ultimately I chose not to wear any of them, probably wisely. But but you know what I mean? Like I literally looking at a Purple Haze poster above my desk. You know what I mean? Like I love Cam'ron. I love Dipset. And I was watching it and I was like, this is rough, man. This is like real rough.
Prior to it, like I was rooting for Dipset, right? And I thought they had a path to victory. Like there was like some like electoral sort of like strategy of like through song curation, like
you thought they could
pull this off, right? I was like, you know, a little bit of Jimmy here, a little bit of Jules there, Cam there, and you know, and they'll get Soccer Moms. And I agree. On first watch, I'm like, oh my God, this is brutal. And then when I rewatched it, and this, you know, this is the only verses I've watched the second time, and this was prior to you even giving your invite for this, I'm like, oh, you know, this is closer than I thought it was. Again, song to song curation, there's a way to make it tight, but again, verses, it's a battle. It's more than just song to song curation, and you could even see it at the beginning, like, you know, they're loading up, getting on stage, and in the corner is Jadakiss by himself with his arms crossed, right? Like he's almost like a panther, just like waiting to strike. and then they start so hot, like, you know, they do FU and just set the tone for the night, and not even the tone with the song selection, but how they're performing it, right? And like the taunting begins, the way that they're ad-libbing, the way that they're covering each other's vocals as hype men. And then, it, you know, it's like it's underwhelming the way that Dipset responds the first song and the second song. And about a third track, like Cam'ron finally gets up and Jada's even taunting that, like, oh, it's about time. Like, now you're getting out. This is me trying to sound like Jada, because it's like, you know, now you want to get out. Now you want to get out the beach chair. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I also like on a macro level or like symbolic level, like just looking at their careers where it's like, you know, Cam has all the talent in the world, probably is underwhelmed a little bit in his career, considering his talent, and trying to like stack up Kisses versus Cam. And, you know, in a way I was like, oh, the Dipset are going to be more egalitarian here, right? A little bit of Cam, this and whatever. But then it's clear the Lox are going to ride Jadakiss as their horse. And so then Dipset is trying to do that with Cam. And as a thought, that's very thrilling, but Cam's just not doing it the same way, right? Like the Lox are rapping.
He has to want it.
Even in the decisions they make before they want it, right? Like Jadakiss is saying, like, you know, y'all sound like Apple Music. This is me doing Jadakiss again. Y'all sound like Apple Music. Y'all are rapping to the tracks.
Rapping over your tracks. He's like, that's not what they're paying for. That's not what they're here for.
And when Cam broke from that, he had moments, right? Like when Cam did Get 'Em Girl, no TV track. It was a straight beat. Even Just Fire, it was a TV track. So that helped, right? And like, you know, for those out, like, TV track is just the vocals on the hook when they're doubling the hook. So it's like, and those are moments where like even the Lox are like Jadakiss is like, yeah, this is my ish. And Jadakiss is even doing ad-libs to Just Fire.
I forget which song it was. I forget if it was Just Fire or something later on where Jada's like, that was good. This 25-2 now.
It's not good enough.
That's me doing Jadakiss. But like, obviously, all the tension is performative tension, or at least much of it is performative tension. But it's interesting coming out of 15 months, no live shows or very, very few live shows, this very, very obvious marquee event, right? And to show up and be like, we're going to rap over vocals. I thought that was an unusual choice. And I'm probably far enough along in my own personal arc where like it doesn't bother me as much anymore. It doesn't bother me like it would have bothered me in like 1997 or whatever. But it was still like strange, you know? I don't think it showed disrespect to the locks necessarily. It showed a kind of disrespect to the format. It's basically like we're treating this like a club walkthrough. And Jadakiss is like, we're literally treating this like a triathlon.
And that created an impediment between Dipset and the audience, right? Like Green Lantern had a good tweet where he's like, you know, I know artists think rapping over to track makes it so the audience could hear better, but then the artists have to like strain to rap louder and it just doesn't sound good at all. And by the way, this is wholly like coronation for like Jadakiss this entire night, what he did. But it's like just the physicality of him being able to like do the taunting the way he's doing. And then the very next like metric or bar or meter of the song launches right into the song. Just like the physicality of like the projection, the breath control. Like, I mean, just everything was just top notch, like A game, right? Like he's literally bringing his A game to them. And Cam, who's supposed to be like the one who has the snaps and jokes, even Jadakiss is besting him in that, where Cam is only responding like F out of here, because that's all he has. It was just like a really like remarkable night for what Jadakiss applied.
Did you see the video on Instagram of Jada after the show doing pull-ups on the street?
Yeah.
I mean, literally incredible. First of all, I've never felt so out of shape in my life as I did watching an IG of Jada, who had just ethered everybody for 2.5 hours, go out to a street, jump up on some scaffolding and do those pull-ups where you're like kicking your legs at the same, like cycle pull-ups or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh my. Yeah. Yeah. That's going to send mans back to the gym for sure. Also, you know, I presume you saw Tyler's comment or post about being like, damn, you know, Jada's kind of attractive.
Oh, yeah.
which, you know, wait, great, strong, solid Tyler insertion into this discourse. Were there moments during the thing that stick with you that are musical moments? A lot of moments stick with me that are non-musical moments. Were there musical moments that stuck with you?
I think what's interesting is that, and it's funny because Cam tried to use this against Kiss. And I even wrote about it in my newsletter where it's like, he's like, you guys are the best side chicks in the cleanest way
peas
I could do it.
Peas and gravy.
Peas and gravy, right? Because he's trying to poke at the song choices that they're making are a lot of guest features and a lot of like remixes. And this is the thing, like when we talk about top five debates, we're talking about artists' personal albums and solo albums. And I just thought, Jade, this is what I wrote in my newsletter, like his ranking may not change, but his legacy is swelling. And it gave us all the reason to like look at him for the reasons we should. And again, like the things I was saying earlier, like the breath control, the taunting, even like We Gonna Make It is one of his profound songs. And I listened to that the other day and, you know, there's like a 45 second like play out at the end. And I'm like, he's not going to say anything because I'm so used to the verses, the way he was like just talking smack. So again, just talking about like musical moments, obviously like the one of the night when he goes into New York, but just so much like counters. And again, referencing earlier when I'm talking about Jewels, Jadakiss says this line where like, I know people who go to jail just to get their teeth fixed. And he's literally like pointing at Jewels. You know, who has very nice new teeth and just got out of jail. But it's like, it's that real world application of his rhymes, right? Like Noriega and Beanie Siegel just had a chat on Noriega's podcast and Nori goes to Beanie Siegel and he's like, you know, I didn't know back then that you weren't supposed to use your real life. And Beanie's like, yeah, like me neither. And so it's like, again, like, it kissed the locks and Dipset. It harkens back to an era where there's like this very like authentic nature of what they did. That you know, you smell the essence of the block in everything they do, and that rhyme and that taunt was it. You know,
there was a moment. It's about an hour into the night. And there is a moment where the conversation, you know, they kept being like, "We said we was gonna get chippy tonight. We're gonna get chippy," but there was a moment where the conversation got extra chippy. Talking about Max B, Styles being like, I spent 3 weeks with Max B before he went away. Talking about blood sets, Mel Matrix. This is stuff that was not necessarily going to necessarily be on the table. And yet, for whatever reason, the friction level did get that high where some of that stuff did actually make its way into the conversation. And I was surprised. I mean, if we were seeing that same exact event, I think Cam was making a joke about SOBs. If we were seeing that same exact event at SOBs in 2000 and something, I could imagine that happening. But I was a little surprised that it happened in 2021 at the Hulu Theater, or as my editor Karen says, the Paramount.
But even the way they beat, the way they back-to-backed it, where it was like, so he does that taunt, they play Locked Up, Akon song with Styles P on it. But then like Jim Jones comes back and he's like, oh, let me correct you on some of those names. And he says it again, you know, he starts doing a gang parlance and then he goes into Certified Gangster, you know? And it, again, you know, it just brought the tension back down a little bit and it made it back to kind of like the musical aspect of it. But that's like the strands of the DNA that they were concocting all night, right? These street elements from the Locks, gang elements from Dipset, intertwining them, which in the past would have been a bad mixture a la SOBs in 2006. 2008.
Tramps 98. If anybody was at Tramps in 1998, email me at podcastnytimes.com.
but plenty of wild nights that end early with like stampedes and you're out of there. But for now, you know, it's this night instead, it made memories where it's like, oh, you know, on a straight line to go from Locked Up to Certified Gangsters tells you of a New York or music landscape in 2006.
Look, I love Purple Haze. Like, I always have. I think it's just, like, a tremendous record.
I very much remember you writing about it a lot when it was out.
Yeah.
Across many publications.
Yeah, Google Caramonica 2005 camera on Purple Haze. There's no shortage of content. When he did Get 'Em Girls, phenomenal. Down and Out? Okay, so, like, I could do like 20 podcasts about this night, right? But I was covering this as part of a Live Music is Returning piece that just came out or is about to come out. I mean, by the time this comes out, it'll already be out, right? And by the time the Versus came, like I've been going to shows for 6 weeks and Delta variant is coming back and, you know, it's getting uglier, right? I was like, okay, I guess I'm just going to wear a mask at the Versus. I didn't feel like thrilled about it, but I was like, well, these are the choices that you have to make, right? And I was like, I must look like a goofball rapping every single word of Down and Out behind a surgical mask. But it had to be. I must have looked like a goofball rapping every single word of Put Your Hands Up behind a surgical mask, but it had to be. I don't get nostalgic very much. We talked about this the other day when we were on the phone plotting this out a little bit. Like, nostalgia is not a special place for me, but so much of what happened on this night triggered stuff that was so formative for me personally.
I think even the way that people gravitate towards Dipset, and although I made that comment that they're not a group in the way that the Locks are, I seen, you know, Twitter chatter was like, oh, this is the difference between like the Locks are family and Dipset are coworkers. And it's like, you know, that's the kind of the further thing from the truth. Like, you've seen Dipset grow up. You've seen them have disagreements that were, you know, vehemently challenging between them.
And public. And very
and public. And like, even like, you know, Jim Jones' birthday was maybe like a month ago and Cam did a post for him. And although it wasn't outwardly like sappy for Cam, it was very like a distinct break from his, you know, public kind of rapper persona. They've really come back tight together. You know, I've had conversations with Jim in the past where, like, at the height of their public disagreements, where, you know, they're not speaking to each other, it looks really ugly. Cam is kind of doing his very, like, torrid kind of, like, teasing and nonchalant kind of detachment. And, you know, Jim is just speaking of Cam in reverence, right? He's like, you know, I know we're beefing now, but he's like, Cam was always the type that could be successful in anything he did. And, you know, and talking about memories of high school. So, you know, it's like rooted in very real things. And, you know, I'm a journalist and there's that distinction of kind of like trying to be attached. But it's like what Danielle Smith wrote in the Vibe History of Hip Hop book a long time ago. It's like, we're close, right? Like, you know, we're close to this culture. And, you know, I feel like a participant as much as I am an observer. And I enjoy seeing Jim's growth. I like that Cam and Jim kind of have this moment back together. Like, you know, I've always loved like what Zeke brings to the group, you know, like seeing what Joel's being free. And even on the Lock side, it's like, I didn't realize until I was writing about Jadakiss early, I'm like, man, I've really written about Kiss a lot.
I was actually going to ask you, so of everybody on, you know, on the stage or in the groups, who have you interviewed over the years? Because I was having that same moment where I was like, you know, this, yes, yes, yeah. Tell me who you've talked to over the years.
All of them except for Cam. I've never interviewed Cam formally, but yeah, but all of them. Chris was the last interview I had pre-pandemic in person. Like, I remember like hand sanitizer everywhere. And then,
oh wow,
it was like March like 13th.
I've interviewed Cam twice, maybe two, three times. Jim once, maybe. I don't think I've ever interviewed Joels, not in a formal way, at least. Styles, even though that Riker's piece didn't happen. I think I did a Styles piece for Double XL. I did a like a regular profile. Jada, I've definitely talked to. I've never profiled, but I've definitely talked to Jada for like various things, but never Sheik. And I love Sheik. Anybody has an old Sheik Luke Silverback Gorillas extra large promo t-shirt, get at me.
Sheik has really good lines, man. And like in FU, when he's like, you have a gut feeling about Sheik, that means you shot. And I'm like, oh man, that's just a great, this is a great like A to B, like, wow. Like
I thought in the context of the verses, he was underused.
I thought so too. I'm glad he had that moment where he did Good Love during that, really like the knockout blow when Joel's made the comment about Girl Records, and then the Locks over deliver and Sheik Luch kind of had like the period to the whole kind of verses, like this is the end. So that was nice, but for sure underused.
You mentioned that, you know, for Jada, you know, maybe his ranking isn't changing, but his legacy is swelling. And, you know, one of the things that was amusing to see is literally 24 hours after Versus, where are the Locks? They are in Atlanta, trapped in the whatever like concrete room under the stadium that Kanye is in. And they put Versus down on one of the Kanye songs. And I thought they sounded phenomenal, like genuinely, and not just phenomenal, but current. That was the most unexpected twist, is it didn't sound purposefully backward looking. It sounded refreshing and kind of au courant.
I made a joke on Twitter recently where it's like, it was on my second time watching the verses. And I'm like, I can't believe Jada and Cam are really battling like 20 years into their careers. And like, they both have hair now. Right. Like, it's you know, at their height and when they were doing it, you know, they both shaved their head in baldies. You know, now they have hair again, like super au courant. Jada has a son who's like 24. Imagine being like Jada gets a son where it's like, oh, my dad just like waxed Dipset live on this stream. He's the talk of New York, talk of hip hop. He looked great doing it. It's like, it's amazing. Like, I like that they had that vibrancy. You know, that there was a moment when, you know, they certainly kind of had like the I guess sort of like the thug excess, like, you know, not just the big white tees and the big jean shorts, but, you know, the bodies that show that they were, you know, enjoying their careers, where it's now, you know, they're juicers.
Yeah. Styles. I've never been to Styles's juice spot. Is it good? Have you been?
I have not. No.
All right. We should go. We should pilgrimage.
I'm with that. Yeah, for sure.
All right, we'll do a podcast meetup at Styles' juice. All these things are popping back into my head. Like, there's some point, I'm pretty sure it's Jada who says this. Maybe it's Styles, but I think it's Jada, where like Cam is like yammering about something. And I'm pretty sure it's Jada's like, get that man a podcast.
Yes, yes.
Oh, man. And amusingly enough, you know, you talk about the Nori. You talked about Nori before. Nori, obviously, a very essential podcast. But the Fat Joe Reaction IG, oh, my God. Talking about is Hermes. The Hermes. Also, shout out Fat Joe, the only celebrity I saw in the room wearing a mask out of everybody. Shout out Fat Joe. But it's great to see famous people behaving like fans. That's how intense the night was.
The peak moment of the night, right? Where Dipset plays Welcome to New York, which, you know, the height of Cam going to Rockefeller and, you know, his career was at the top notch, plays it. And also, like, Jim's making this comment of, you let off too many of your good records early. We're coming back, right? And so they have this great moment. I think it was Jewels again who makes a comment like, you know, you don't have a New York record like this. And then Kiss goes into this monologue. And on the live stream, the way it's framed, where it's like a very wide shot, he's flanked by Styles and Sheik. And he's like, you know, I don't live in Miami. Yeah. I don't live in Colorado. As the beat is dropping, right? And it's, and, you know, it's a very sort of like sparse opening, doom, doom, doom. And he's, you know, he's saying this, I don't live in Miami. I don't live in Colorado. I'm here. I'm on my block. Come see me. This is Kiss. I'm outside as the camera's zooming in. And then you see Fat Joe. They play the portion of the hook that's Fat Joe on it. And he's just losing it. And so then on his recap, like, he talks about that moment. And he's like, I can't lie to you. He's like, I wanted to pull a Little Mama. I wanted to get on that stage. I wanted the smoke, right? In like the very distinct way he delivers it. But you know, to transform him, ultimate insider and participant, into that fan person where it's almost rewiring what he wants, right? He's like, I don't want to be backstage. I don't want this. I want to be watching it. It was amazing. And again, like, just such high moments of like these like counter attacks and seeing these like heavyweight blows like that. That was really like where it was chock full of those moments where it's like era inducing kind of like nostalgia meeting like this like current day, this high level execution. Like those are the things that really made it like a thrilling view and even better on replay.
If anybody wants to rent out a like a movie theater, like Alamo Drafthouse or something, and just play this, I'll pay for it. You know what I mean? Like, I'll bring the bottle of scissors I've been holding this entire time. Like, like it's, yes, it's a, it was a very, very special, very, very, very impressive and genuinely like life-affirming night, I found, especially coming off of this past year and a half.
For sure.
Jason, what a pleasure. Reminisce with you any day.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Pedro, we got to go out with New York. Boom, 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 boom. I got a honey, the honey. I'm from New York, New York. I got a that spits next time if you talk, you talk. I got a honey, the honey. I'm from New York, New York. I got a that spits next time if you talk, you talk.
Hi, this is Kara Swisher, and I want to talk to you about my new podcast for the New York Times called Sway. When you hear someone influential, a business leader or a culture icon, or God forbid, a politician, telling us about themselves, and they're like, we're going to end world hunger or cure cancer, or we're going to revolutionize the tech industry if only you'll buy our product. And it just sounds like they're reading from a press release. Yeah, we don't learn much from talking points. If you want to know what people who hold power in our world are really all about, you need to hear how they answer the tough questions. And that is my specialty. That's why I'm teaming up with the New York Times for a new podcast called Sway. I'm going to talk to some big names, but also some names you may not recognize, but need to know. And although it might get messy, in fact, it's guaranteed to be messy, it's going to be really fun too. You can get Sway wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes are available Mondays and Thursdays.
For part two of this episode, this versus cast, I had to talk to someone who was in the building. J-Rod watched it from a distance, but I had to talk to someone who was there with me, who was in the room, who could still feel on his skin the tactile nature of the assault that was happening in that on that stage. Jason Buford is here. Jason writes for Rolling Stone. This is where he covered versus for Pitchfork, Passion of the Weiss. Jason, first time on podcast, Young Gunner, welcome. How you doing?
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. Hard to not be doing well after seeing the performance that Jadakiss put on.
That is correct. That is an inspiration for all people.
It literally is.
It really is. Like, if you are feeling depressed, low, uncertain about yourself, if you feel like life doesn't have much to offer you right now, what I say to you is go watch Jadakiss absolutely mop the floor with everybody on Versus.
Go watch Jadakiss do his job properly, right? Like, oh, that is a God. Yeah, that is a man who knows how to do his job.
It's inspiring. I feel like when I finally go on book leave, like I should just play this every morning before I start writing. You know what I mean? Like it'll make me a better person. It'll make me a more
it's a motivational tactic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Jason, before we get into the room, I want to also talk about motivational tactics, right? Can you just briefly tell the people how you got into Versus? Because I think it's important for people to understand the power of persistence. So just give us the 60-second breakdown of how you got into Versus.
So I've always been a type of person who prides itself on just like, give yourself a chance, right? Just like, give yourself a chance.
That is correct. Correct.
So basically I had told Rolling Stone, hey, like, I want to cover this Versus. And they were like, of course, they were like, yeah, let's do it. But I'd spoken to MSG. I made a YouTube video about all this, by the way.
What?
Yeah.
You're vlogging? Like, you vlogged it?
Yeah. We're doing a little vlogging out here and there, just a little bit, tad bit. So I had actually had it spoke to MSG over the phone, and I was like, hey, I'm Jason Buford of Rolling Stone. I want to cover the event tonight, but I don't try not to get the ticket. Can I have a press pass? They said, email them and they'll get back to me. They ended up not getting back to me.
They said, that's cute. That's cute.
They're like, cool story, kid.
That's cool story.
Like, yeah. And so I'm like, you know, I'm at home. I live in Flatbush, so I'm at home. I'm like, God damn, like, what do I do? Like, am I just not going to go? Like, no, I have to go. Like, I want to cover the event. I have to go. And like, the piece only works if I'm there. And so I was like, okay, let me go. Let's just go. Let's see what happens. I go. I tell security, hey, I'm Jason Buford of Rolling Stone. Come up with a story. Maybe they'll let me in. I get there and I run into our boys, Jeff and Eric Rosenthal of the It's the Real podcast. Ran
Shout
into
out
them
out. Jeff and Eric.
Shout out Jeff and Eric. I run into them outside. And so they're like, Jason, I'm like, oh, yo, what up? Fellas, like, you know, we're all talking or whatever. And I'm like, by the way, I have no ticket to this event. I'm like, by the way, guys, like, I have no ticket to this event. Like, I'm just like Cameron's, I'm there, and like Cameron's, Dipset in general, their whole entourage is out there like upset about not being let in at the time. Like, these are the same dudes that ended up on the stage. And so I'm just like, yeah, I'm in the same boat as these dudes, man. So they ended up saying that you, John Caramanica, had a extra ticket for me. Yeah, well, not for me personally, but an extra ticket in general.
That is correct. See, this is the thing, and the lesson I want people to take away from this is you got to set yourself up to win. If you don't set yourself up to win, in the first segment, I was talking to the other Jason about like a winner's mindset. I'm not trying to have like a self-help podcast here, but I was talking about having a winner's mindset and how Jadakiss came into that night with a winner's mindset and Cameron came into that night with a, meh, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. You showed up, no ticket, finessing and landed your way into a ticket sitting next to my guy, Brendan. Shout out my guy, Brendan Timmons, who had the other extra ticket that I had.
Brendan, great guy. Yeah.
Great guy. Great vests. Love Brendan. So I just wanted to let that be a lesson for everybody who's listening that if you do not put yourself in a position to win, winning is not an option. That's it.
You got to put yourself in position to get lucky, right? You got to show up at the door. You never know what's going to happen.
Do not know what's going to happen. Okay, now that we have cleared the Thug Motivation 101 section of podcasts, now that we've gotten past that, look, I've been recently going to a lot of concerts for this big piece that I've been working on. None of the shows were even remotely close to the intensity of this show. This show was, and maybe it's just that I haven't been out of the house in 18, you know, 16 months or whatever, but the actual density of the air inside the venue was materially different than the density of the air outside the venue. You could feel it when you walked in, and not just the weed. The weed was part of it, but the sweat, the expectation, the heavy breathing, just the hours of panting that were going on leading up to it. Tell me about your vibe on the physicality of that room.
So I go in and the DJ is playing just a bunch of records. He played What We Do. He played, there's a few bigger records he played. He played.
Hit 'Em Up.
I was about to say. Interestingly, you know,
that was weird.
Very odd. He played Hit 'Em Up. You know, I got the sound kind of got sucked into the arena when that played, by the way. I was like, I realized that I was the only one rapping. And I was like, oh, yeah. Interesting. I mean, I'm New York born and raised, but I love Tupac. So, you know.
So. That's okay. You get a pass this time, Jason. You get a pass. This one time.
And so I remember that. And I was just, I was talking to some fans too. And they were saying a lot of differentiating opinions too. A lot of fans were ready to go in terms of what was going to happen. And they were saying that, you know, it was a lot of Lox or Dipset people, right? It was like both. People, you know, generally thought it was an evenly matched battle. And so I remember just being there and then feeling it. And then as we went down to the section that was closer to you, I remember Lox coming out and Jadakiss is not saying a word. Yo, this man, Styles and Sheik are like, yo, we here. What up with it? Jadakiss is saying nothing. Just pure me mugging. And I was like, oh, he's about to get it tonight. It's about to go down.
And then when Cam comes out you know, like 5 minutes after Jim and Joel's and Zeke came out, and like they're setting up the lawn chair, and you know, it's like all this other stuff is happening. I thought he might not show.
Yeah, I thought he wasn't gonna show. He was gonna pull an Axl Rose and not show.
Cam's here. He's doing like a sketch. He's doing sketch comedy. You know what I mean? Like that's what he's doing here. And Jade Kiss is like, I literally came to eat you piece by piece. Like I came to demolish you.
It almost felt like Locke knew that this was an opportunity to cement their legacy.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Like it almost felt like they knew that this was an opportunity they had to show this generation or even the past generations how good the Locke actually was. Don't forget about the Locke.
If you think about those two crews, obviously the Locke were a little bit firmer, more grounded in the late mid to late 90s, and Dipset's a little bit more early to mid 2000s. But if you think about institutional memory, I would venture to say that the Dipset has had a longer arc of influence than the Locks. The Locks is very much a product of its era, whereas Dipset, you know, you have people who are fashion influenced by Dipset, who are lyrical influenced by Dipset, like the kind of long tail of Dipset aesthetics and iconography is much longer.
Yeah, you can make a case. There's not a lot of the ASAP Mobs and all those groups. Like Dipset was the origin of that.
That's all right. It's all Dipset to me. And so in my mind, and I, you know, I'm someone who grew up with both of them, but, you know, certainly have a tremendous soft spot for the Locks. I was basically like, man, this is going to be like a very flashy annihilation of the Locks. And the Locks are going to come through real blue collar, and Dipset's going to be like flamboyant and ostentatious and just like create this spectacle. That's what I thought was going to happen. And then I realized, and we talked about this a little bit afterwards, that I think Dipset came through resting on their laurels and the Locks came through doing push-ups, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Locks are armed. They're armed and ready to go. They're like locked and loaded.
Right. And so that was very, like you say, that was evident from the way that Jada and Cam came on stage. That was evident.
Yeah. I mean, Cam comes on stage. He's got like the beach chair. I love Cam, by the way. So
that's like, I love Cam.
I gotta love Cam. He's with the beach chair. He like felt like, it almost felt like he was like, oh, I'm above this or whatever.
Yes.
And it's like, nah, Jada's just like, nah, we're performing.
Yes. Were there moments, whether musical or meta musical, that actually jumped out at you and surprised you?
The Who Shot Your Freestyle was surprising. Ooh. I'm a little young. So like on a real level, like some of these tracks I've had to like listen to throughout my time, like becoming more of a rap fan and going deep dive into the genre more. It's like hip hop has such depth to it that people don't really understand. And so like some of those Locks records I have just listened to like very recently. It's like those mixtape classics that they were doing. And so I remember when Jada came out and did the Who Shot Your Freestyle, I was like, oh, he's doing this? And then the way he's rapping with no song over it, no vocals over it, just a beat. And it's just like not even breaking a sweat. I was like, wow, this is a top tier MC.
Hearing Cam, mostly Cam, but Cam and Joel's really kind of like deriding the Locks for being mixtape rappers or being remix rappers or side piece rappers or whatever. But in that context, and I was talking to the other Jason earlier, it's like SOBs, Tramps, you know, like even Tunnel, you know, it's like 2 a.m. at a nightclub rapper that turned out to be the thing that won in this context. Maybe if this exact same versus was at the Beacon Theater or on the main stage at the Garden, you know, somewhere that's a little fancier, maybe it doesn't work the same way. But in this boxing match, in this hot box of a room, that approach was the correct approach to take, clearly.
Yeah, it was exactly the correct approach to take. And I also think that in general, they brought it back to the essence of the battle, right? I think, you know, Dipset is more like, you know, we're out here performing and, we're just out here and we're out here being cool and shit. And they're like, nah, we're battling. I mean, that is the essence of the battle. And I think Locks and especially Jada just like brought that type of energy. And like, we're in New York, right? We're in the Garden and they just like brought that type of like atmosphere and that type of ethos to them on the stage.
And I'm glad you also bring up the idea of the battle because Versus has become a love fest. And that's not to take anything away from so many of these really good versus, quote unquote, battles that we've had in the last, you know, say 6 months, right? But the idea that Versus is a source of any tension, that's not real. That doesn't happen anymore. And even if the tension in this show was mostly for performance sake, it was mostly shtick, right? But even if it's still the core principle of a battle was much, 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 much more in place here than in any recent Versus. Because even when they were going at each other a little bit, talking smack to each other, even if they're friends, even if they go have a steak afterwards, doesn't matter. Like, they really, that pure essence of you are on the same stage as me, and therefore you are an obstacle to me, and I am going to mow you down to the best of my abilities. That energy has not been on Versus in a while.
Yeah, it's the essence of competition, right? Like, and that is really essentially like what we're saying is like the competition aspect is something that the Locks took seriously. It's like, obviously these guys aren't beefing with each other, right?
They're going on tour. They're going on tour together.
Yeah, they're going on tour, and the snatching of Jewel's bandana is mostly for effect, right? But there was a real sense of competition, a real sense of no, we're the Kings of New York. We're the best group in New York. And I felt that the Locks really took that to heart. It really took that seriously.
That was a title that used to carry some weight. And not to be all old man about it, but it's just not a meaningful title anymore, right? It's just genuinely not a meaningful title. Like, maybe if Pop Smoke was still with us, maybe we'd have some conversations about that. But I just don't think, as a goal, King of Atlanta is like a much more meaningful goal than King of New York. You know what I mean? But these are two crews from an era where that primacy really, really mattered. Like, it was huge. And the city tonally shifted, even from Bad Boy era Locks to Rough Riders era Locks. That's a tonal shift in the city. And then later, the shift after Rough Riders into G-Unit and Dipset, that's another tonal shift in the city. You could identify years, eras, moments in New York lore specifically traced to who was the alpha dog in all this. And there was a stretch where Jada was the alpha dog. There's a stretch where Cam was the alpha dog. It may not matter much now. It may not mean much now. And there may not be a competition like that now. But, you know, for the genre at age 25, as opposed to the genre at age 45 or 50, those were still things that people were fighting over.
Yeah. And that was something that was prevalent in the overall scene. And as well as like within the groups itself, like within artists itself, right? You know, you have beef that started in New York based on who was the King of New York at that time, right? Like, you had beef between it, whether it be Jay-Z or Nas or Cameron or 50 or Jadakiss and 50. All these beefs, or Ja Rule and 50, all these beefs were based off of, okay, we're both from New York. Who's the best doing in New York currently?
If you were the best in New York, you were the best in the world, most likely. And, you know, before people start complaining, obviously, I care about Southern rap. Like, I'm just talking broad picture. Like, don't send me any emails. Come on.
Well, you know what's really funny about that is I think nowadays what we're, if I may, nowadays what we're doing kind of is, you know, we're talking about these other genres have, you know, matter. But, you know, hip-hop was still originated in New York. I'm sorry, it was.
Yeah, of course.
It was, of course. And so when you have two classic New York groups coming on stage, it brings a level of not only nostalgia, but a level of pride that we have. That's not going away.
Look, as someone who's been living this for decades, writing about it for decades, but also writes about a whole bunch of other stuff, this is as close as I've gotten to like that pure feeling of like, not just why did I start writing in the first place, but why did I like fall in love with it? Like, why is this the music that defines my childhood? You know what I mean? Like, this event was that pure for me. It was nice, especially after the last year and a half, to have like a little dose of that as like a reminder that like, hey, things might not be great in the world, but like, at least we have this. At least we can access this feeling.
This is why I do what I do, right? You know, like, I saw Jada open up with, I don't live in Colorado. I don't live in Miami. I'm from here. Like, I'm outside.
And I just want to say, I love Cameron. Whenever Cam did the video, I think it was during one of the 50 beefs, where he's outside in his backyard in Florida, I think. And he's like filming like the equivalent of an IG live pre-IG. And he's like talking talking all this mess. And then he like walks off camera and he's like, show him my pool. And then they like show this, like, frankly, not very impressive pool, but it's very hilarious. Cam is great. When I first interviewed Cam in the early to mid 2000s, he wasn't living in Harlem. He was living in Fort Lee, New Jersey. You know, and nothing wrong with living in Fort Lee, New Jersey. He had a lovely place. You know what I mean? Like, absolutely not. And like, if you can afford to live in that place, like, please do. But Jada, like, basically splitting the hairs of like, you're from a block, I'm on a block. That's, it's just, nobody does that anymore. And it was just so wonderful to have like a little bit of that throwback frisson to kind of carry me through.
It was the epicenter of the event itself, because that's exactly what Jada's just been saying the whole event, and just exactly how he's been proving that with his performance. It's like, yo, I'm from here. Like, I'm home right now. And so I'm putting on a show.
And even more pointed when Cam at the beginning of the night had been like, y'all go first. We're the home team. We're from Manhattan.
He's like, Cam, you live in Miami.
Amazing. Jason, I appreciate you calling in. You know that we're going to go out with the most important, crucial song. We gonna make it, obviously. I am not a person who's prone to breaking things. I'm not prone to like disruptive physical activity. But when We Gonna Make It came on at the end of the night, I could have torn up my seat. Like, I could have like literally lifted it off out of the ground of the garden. That's how pumped I was.
I had to put my hands in my pockets because I was afraid I was going to hit somebody. I was literally like, yo, let me just put my hands in a place where it can't, like, where my elbows can't swing. And I'm like, you know, like, the opening of the frail, it literally makes you want to do pull-ups on the street. And then the bar, the introductory bar, which I think is one of the more underrated introductory bars, like, in history, like, it'd be in the top 10 of my list of all time. He literally goes, because when my coke comes in, they have to use the scales that they weigh the whales with. Bro, what? Stupid. And it's like, when that song hit, it was like, down goes Dipset. It was like, it was over after that. We weren't really paying attention to what they were doing after that. It was like, oh, man.
Well, Jason Buford, I'm happy to be on a yacht with our favorite albums anytime with you. I appreciate you calling in. That's our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Send me your favorite moments from the verses. Get on the Facebook group. Get on the Discord. Subscribe to podcast anywhere you get your audio content. Hell, I don't even care if you subscribe to podcast. Go rewatch this verses. It is that special. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. We will be back next week. We gon' make it.
The frail shoot. Cause when my come in, they gotta use the scale that they weigh the whales with.
Carlson's on the Jeep. Bugatti made the prototype. Hope you get the picture, but you just can't photo light.
Determined, make it. Kicking down the door and we burning naked.
The house costs a million. Sitting on the beach and the only thing I know is this furniture.